Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Elena McKenna. I represent appellants in this matter, bar number 41780. The question before this court involves the statutory interpretation of section 8-41-209, which is the firefighter cancer statute under the workers' compensation system. We're specifically dealing here with section 2B of that statute, which involves the ability of an employer to rebut the statutory presumption of causation in the firefighter cancer cases. The issue here is whether the ALJ erred in determining that respondents did not overcome the statutory presumption because presentation of various risk factors, which do not equate to a cause in fact, is insufficient to meet the statutory burden in overcoming the presumption. In looking at the plain language of 841-2092B, this provision does not define medical causation. It also does not preclude the consideration of risk factors in determining whether one overcame the statutory presumption. Therefore, we have to look at the General Assembly and the legislative intent behind this provision. The legislative history shows that the irrebuttable or the rebuttable presumption was specifically included by the General Assembly, which provided the employer an opportunity to rebut this presumption of causation of the claimant's cancer, which in this matter was melanoma. The legislative history behind this, you need to look at it at a workers' compensation occupational disease case. The fact that the legislature imposed this presumption in the statute and also included a rebuttable presumption means that solely the burden shifts from the claimant in proving causation to the respondents. That is it. This is solely a shift of the burden of proof. There is no preclusion of what type of evidence may be submitted or considered when determining whether a respondent overcame the statutory presumption. The court in this matter, the ALJ and the panel, seems to focus on the risk factors versus causative factors distinction. And both experts in this matter, Dr. Mayer and Dr. Milliken, agree there is no known cause of cancer. There are only known risk factors associated with whether one may develop melanoma. So if a respondent employer is precluded from presenting evidence of risk factors, then they are, in essence, unable to ever present evidence to overcome the statutory presumption solely based on the simple fact that there is no known cause of cancer. An interpretation of the statute in this manner will ultimately result in a strict liability statute because there is no ability to prove a causative factor when we're talking about the enumerated cancers, specifically here melanoma.
Excuse me, Ms. McKenna. If you have a case where there's not, where there isn't the statutory burden of proof, for purposes of workers' comp, is it sufficient to use risk factors to establish causation?
Absolutely. It's done all of the time, especially in occupational disease cases, because oftentimes there are no known causes of a particular disease, only risk factors associated with development of the condition itself. So physicians and administrative law judges commonly use risk factors in their causation analysis with respect to determining whether or not this individual's injury or condition was causally related to his employment. And currently, the way the law is set up and the interpretations by the courts, the employer is in a catch-22 of sorts. This court recently, in the City of Littleton versus Crist case, found that the employer cannot attack the scientific validity of the presumption, nor can they undermine, through its evidence, the legislative premise. If this ALJ's ruling is affirmed, then the employer is precluded from presenting risk factors of the cancer, and in essence, is precluded from ever defending these types of cases. They become strict liability statutes. And you know, there's the rebuttable presumption portion of the statute is rendered meaningless. So we need to be able to give meaning to that provision in the statute and permit.
So, sorry to interrupt. Your position is that, Chris, the majority was wrongly decided?
Well, I think with respect to this case, Chris is distinguishable from this matter for a couple of reasons. Number one, in this matter, Respondents did not dispute the initial causal relationship between the claimant's melanoma and the firefighting. To the contrary, the parties stipulated at the outset of the hearing that the presumption applied, and the issue then for the hearing was whether the respondents overcame that statutory presumption. So I think just the procedural nature of the case is different in that matter. Secondly, this case is different from Crist because in Crist, they did not present any evidence, respondents did not present any evidence of an alternative cause. Here, respondent employer presented alternative evidence of the claimant's cause of the claimant's melanoma, namely the sun exposure and the atypical nevi or moles that the claimant had. So I think the case is distinguishable based on that fact because there was no analysis in Crist of what type of evidence can be considered in determining whether an employer overcame the statutory presumption, or more specifically, whether risk factors can be or should be considered in assessing these types of cancer cases. If this court does find that Crist is controlling, then respondents respectfully argue the majority opinion is incorrect, or the standard set forth is incorrect, in that it implies that an employer must delineate and identify each and every specific exposure that a firefighter experienced during his employment, and then disprove a broad and unspecified range of potential causes of his melanoma as it relates to firefighting. And that is basically an irrebuttable presumption. The majority opinion in Crist recognized that an employer often and most likely will have difficulty locating or obtaining information disproving these specific exposures, and that evidence of alternative causation may be sufficient to overcome the presumption, which is what was presented here by respondents through the testimony of Dr. Milliken. The ALJ's findings and the panel's discussion about causative versus risk factors also is important because the dissenting opinion in Crist discussed how medical evidence in the form of epidemiological evidence establishing general causation should be sufficient to overcome the statutory presumption. That is what was presented here through testimony of various increased relative risks, where you compare the various risk factors associated with a claimant outside of firefighting, here again it was the sun exposure and the atypical moles, with the increased relative risk of firefighting. That is really the only way an employer ever is going to be able to defend these types of cases based on the fact that there are no known causes of cancer, only known risk factors. So, you know, respondents at this point, if the court does feel that Crist is controlling, we respectfully argue that the dissenting opinion in Crist is the correct legal standard. The General Assembly did not intend for this to be a strict liability statute. That's the purposeful inclusion of the rebuttable presumption provision. And at this point, I'd like to reserve my time if the court has any further questions. Not any further.
Can I ask you just one quick question? On the overcoming the presumption and the preponderance of evidence, if the evidence, this is not the evidence that's in the case, but if the evidence were that it, for a firefighter, it's 1.32, and for some other source, it's 1.33, would that be enough to overcome the presumption?
Well, I think that's obviously for the trier fact to decide, meaning the ALJ, but when you're looking at these types of cases, really all you can do is weigh the relative risk, which is established through those percentages. So yeah, in this case, I would argue 1.33 is obviously greater than 1.32, and it would be enough to overcome the statutory presumption because you have to weigh what is the more statistically significant cause to a reasonable degree of medical probability. The court should not focus on whether firefighting did not play any causative role in the claimant's development of the cancer, because based on the nature of the presumption itself, once the claimant meets that provision, that the presumption applies, well then firefighting technically would play some causative role based on the nature of the presumption itself. So the focus should not be on whether it did not play any causative role, but what is the more statistically significant causation item, and you can only look at the relative risk. If there were no causes of cancer, we wouldn't be here. We would have a different type of scientific discussion. But unfortunately, there are no known causes. So if an employer is presented with an inability to discuss risk factors, which is what the ALJ found, the discussion of risk factors outside of firefighting is insufficient to overcome the statutory presumption. Again, we are left with a strict liability statute, and that's clearly contrary to the intent of the General Assembly. Thank you.
You have about 4.5 minutes left.
Members of the panel, counsel, Firefighter Zukowski. You know, there, this whole area of risk versus cause has been permeating these cases for as long as I've been doing them, and I've done quite a number of them, and some of them, this is the second one to be up here. Chris is now up the Supreme Court for consideration of cert. It's like, kind of hold on to mercury sometimes. And, you know, the reality is, there is nothing in the statute that even, or even legislative history, which suggests that the presumption be overcome because of some view that some risks are more significantly significant. The only risk we know under the statute, which is significant enough to cause or be caused by firefighting, is the risk of cancer in the five systems that have been addressed, one of which is skin, which we're talking about here. Now, one of the things that has been absent from some of the discussions at ICAP and in the Chris case have been two factors which, and I'd ask this court to consider, because I know you've read the brief, so we're not going to go over all of that stuff. Number one is, you know, there is a social policy decision made by the legislature to protect the interests of firefighters. I realize they've used the term a substantial benefit. I don't disagree with that. But why? The why is that these guys put their lives in danger for the rest of us. So they've gotten a substantial benefit in this state, which they don't have in some other states. And there are some risks that firefighters have in other states that are not covered as a presumption. The second thing is the way these cases are briefed from the respondent side, and it's not meant to be a criticism, I can understand why they don't do this, is what they don't discuss is where you, the steps you have to go through first to get the presumption and recognition that there are only five enumerated areas. Cancer occurs in numerous other areas, as I pointed out in my brief, and it is not covered in the same presumptive effect that the individual has worked, the same firefighter, has worked for under 5 years as a firefighter. And can I, and also, it doesn't work the same way if that same firefighter would have been diagnosed with some level of cancer before being hired, and that, again, at the time of hiring, there's evidence of the existence of it. So that takes a whole universe of firefighters out of this, leaving only those five areas. Now, with regard to causation, you asked the question, Judge Miller, about causation in work comp cases. I was just thinking about the medical treatment guidelines, Rule 17, and its dealing with cumulative trauma. Risk factor analysis is frequently used to establish a level of causation in where a physical injury is reported and where there's knowledge in medical science about what risk factors will give rise to a medical condition. Frequently it's used in the negative to say these risk factors are not present and we're going to defeat causation. This actually, I consider this Rule 17 cumulative trauma a deviation from accepted rules of a workers' comp, but that's the world we're in. We're dealing with risk. Risk does not equal cause. The risk of cause has been established to be firefighting. It's simple. It is not, it is not easy for the worker, as I've shown through these cases. We have to go in, we have to present evidence. And, you know, as the ICAP said below, Millerkin agreed that the cause of melanoma is unknown. So that means, after all this risk analysis, it's unknown, and the firefighter should be deprived of it based on the speculation that that risk is higher, though, in fact, the risk of firefighting is deemed by the legislature to be adequately causative.
So risk is irrelevant.
I would say only in as far as it plays into some aspects of the factual case. I can see a case where there is an absolute absence of risk to the firefighter. In fact, I confronted one. And therefore, that absence of risk enabled the overcoming of the presumption as it related to that employer. Now, you say, what kind of circumstance could that be? Well, this particular case, the firefighter was at a fire department doing training work after he'd been a firefighter in another fire department for quite a number of years. And then, in that new training position, they only used CO2. They didn't do line firefighters. I said, hey, have you ever, you mean you've not been on a blaze? You've not been out to suppress a fire or overhaul things? No. Not been out of your license? No. Not been exposed to any carcinogens that you know of there? No. And so I'd say risk played a factor there. But to the extent that you use risk to equal cause, you're on unsteady ground. So it has to be, you know, what you're suggesting, and that's what's happened here, that they want that responded fire districts who have been fighting this thing from day one, and despite having evidence and testimony before in various courts and the lack of knowledge about the causes of cancer, saying, we now know that if we can compound these risks, we think, well, not we know thus far they've not been successful, but we believe that if we can compound these risks and build up a higher numerical, you might say statistical model or whatever, based on, again, speculation, because the risk only says that there may be a connection between this. So look at it. Now, I can't say it better than that that doctor I quoted, Mukherjee, who just basically says, you know, if we could say that all risk dealt with causation, we'd be doing a cancer-free lifestyle. We can't. So I don't dispute that these cases are hard on the respondents to win. But the legislature has spoken, and the legislature said, no, we didn't mean it. I say that this court is bound to recognize the social policy perspective here and to understand that the claimants, as firefighters, are put in a pretty darn strong position, as recognized in the City of Littleton or Chris case, which I argued, that was a pretty extensive decision. I was surprised at the depth of the analysis, but, you know, came to the same conclusion. Respondents' lawyers did a good job. They're stuck with the statute. That's the way it should be, because that's what the legislature intended. Can it be changed? Yes.
So,
Have I not answered your question, Judge Graham?
No, I think you've answered it. I'm
not satisfied.
What I'm puzzled by is that both sides here, the experts on both sides, seem to equate risk with cause.
Actually, Mayer doesn't. She basically says risk does not equal cause. She agrees with the concept that risk is just evidence that something may happen, which is not adequate to establish that it did happen.
Probability.
It's only a probability, but it's really a possibility. That's how I look at it. Because, all right, you take that section that I dealt with in my brief, and I dealt with that hearing. Take a geographic map of the United States and deal with the instance of melanoma and start to, you know, look at the various levels of UV exposure or UVA exposure. Well, you find, ironically, that Washington, Oregon have much lower levels of UVA exposure, but higher levels of melanoma. Explain that.
Maybe they don't use sunscreen.
Well, maybe they do, but this firefighter did. So, right? So how's it, what? So let's assume.
But you people use sunscreen.
Yes,
dermatologists say we should use sunscreen.
I agree. This firefighter does. He testified that he did. So,
well, it's a risk, but it certainly can be a causative factor of later in life developing melanoma.
No, it can't be. It's not the cause. It's a risk. It's a concurrent that it is a concurrent risk that may or may not give rise to this, and you can't point back and say this type of exposure does cause cancer. No study has said that. So I'm sorry to be strong in my disagreement.
That's fine.
I'm just trying to, my view is that is the problem with the respondents' argument. That they are saying we must, because there's a high risk, this must be the cause.
Well, it may be that the trier of fact, the ALJ, listens to your argument and is persuaded, but that would be a discretionary call.
Well, I agree, and that's what the ALJ did here, and I believe I have said the ALJ was within his discretion. So that's how I read the opinion, recognizing that what they, you know, they accepted the ALJ's conclusion. I think it was that the risk factors outside of, he said that the evidence was that risk factors outside of firefighting were insufficient to sustain the respondent's burden of proof, where those risk factors could not be equated with the cause, in fact, of the claimant's cancer. It's going to be the same problem in every one of these cases, because the studies have not gone there. The evidence is not there. The knowledge is not there. I mean, the last time I argued one of these cases is the Chris case. You'll remember that there was a time when we were told that drinking coffee was not good for you, and that you should avoid drinking coffee, and that certain things, and I refer to heart problems, and they even suggested genital urinary problems. All of a sudden, the study comes out, finds out guys that drink 8 cups of coffee a day have less risk of contracting prostate cancer. Say what? Where did this come from? This stuff is good. This is going to go on. And it may be that the result of what the social policy is going to be is that the various departments are going to provide a higher level of protection, which they already are doing, to the firefighters when they're out doing the suppression and the overhaul of the fires.
So the strict liability is a social policy here.
I think so.
As a practical matter.
Well,
I mean, the only example you're given.
As a practical matter, in a case in which they cannot prove that the risk they're arguing was causative, yeah, they lose.
But the only example you've been able to give us of when the presumption could be overcome is when a firefighter never fights fires.
Okay.
Doesn't that mean essentially anybody who's out fighting fires, it's a strict liability test?
I believe that that is entirely, it makes it extremely more difficult. Can I see another situation? Yes, I can. Can I see a firefighter who is a lifeguard in California, and despite everything we know and what we've been told, he goes suntan. He goes to a tanning booth every day, and then he contracts cancer after 5 years. I might lose that case. But if there's sufficient evidence to show the connection, causal connection, and then you have to have a doctor that says, I know what the cause is. And since nobody knows, and you know, they never said at the legislature that we know the causes of cancer. When firefighters come into my office, some of them will say, well, this is a slam dunk. I say, it's not a slam dunk. See, the problem is, you think this says that firefighting causes cancer. The statute doesn't say that. The statute says it's presumed. And it puts a heavy, heavy, heavy burden on the respondents to show that it doesn't. Now, in this case, the burden, the respondents didn't come close to meeting that burden because of the equivocation by their own expert, who actually agreed with our expert. Well, there'd be a different case, different time, different facts, perhaps. My view with you, Judge Furman, there was just findings of fact that were upheld, determined by the ALJ, and which were upheld or found to be substantial by the ICL. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I don't know what inferences are going to be developed with regard to gene pools. But I do know that right now, they ain't got the horses. And they can't show causation in these cases, and they haven't been able to. And they're trying, but it ain't happening. So that's all. I got 36 seconds. I'm sure you can give me a question I could be flummoxed around.
Well, to state the obvious, if the risk factor, which I think both experts agreed to here in this case, was 1.32 for firefighters.
That's the analysis done, the meta-analysis done by Lemaster.
Okay, just accept that. Okay.
Let's say accept that.
And then there's similar evidence that shows that a particular hobby that a certain firefighter engages in that maybe involves dealing with chemicals has a factor of 10,000. Right. That, for you, that would still not be sufficient to overcome the presumption, correct?
Maybe. Let them prove it. So I would say, yeah, that risk factor. And I look at my expert and I say, that's what they're saying. What do you think? Oh, that's crazy. There's no basis in evidence.
Well,
so you're assuming there is a basis, and yeah. I'm saying to you, okay, I'm from Missouri, prove it, but let's assume every fact you say is correct. They've still got the burden, overcome the presumption. And you don't do it by numbers. You do it by causation analysis. Thank you.
Your Honors, I agree with counsel that you do overcome the presumption by a causation analysis. What respondents are arguing here, obviously, is that risk factors should be a part of that causation analysis. Occupational disease cases that include analysis of risk factors are not limited to physical injury cases. They involve toxic exposure cases as well. And in response to counsel's statement that the ALJ considered the risk factors and made a factual determination on that, that is incorrect, and the panel's interpretation of the ALJ's order in that matter is incorrect based on the plain language of the ALJ's order itself. If you look at paragraph 12 of the order, the ALJ specifically stated he did not consider the risk factors as sufficient evidence because they did not equate to a cause in fact. And it appears in the ALJ's order that he felt constrained by the decision in Crist, which at that time had been decided by the panel. It was not yet before this court. And this is demonstrated by what I believe is an extraordinary footnote on page 8 of his order, footnote 2, where he sends somewhat of a signal about his opinion on the state of the law. And also in paragraph 13 of his order, he indicates that to the extent respondents feel prejudiced by the inability to present risk factors in a causation analysis, that our remedy lies with the appellate court to potentially interpret 841-209 differently and deviate from the Crist opinion. So clearly, based on the language of the order itself, he did not consider the risk factors in his analysis. There are no findings of fact with respect to analyzing the various risk factors presented by respondents. In this case, our expert, Dr. Milliken, testified that based on the claimant's atypical moles or nevi, the number of moles he had, 4 to 5, that increased the relative risk by 6 to 10 or 600 to 1,000% for this particular individual to develop melanoma. That evidence was not considered as sufficient evidence. The ALJ clearly did not even mention that in his findings of fact. So I disagree that the ALJ made a factual determination in this matter.
Ms. McKenna, didn't the plaintiffs in the Love Canal prove their case with risk analysis?
In the which case?
Love Canal.
Is that the Minnesota case?
No, that's the case out of New York that toxic waste dump happened to contaminate everybody's drinking water.
I'm not familiar with the specific facts of that case, but I do agree risk factors in toxic floor cases are often utilized in analyzing causation analysis. And I think that's why this court, in the majority opinion in Crist, recognized that evidence of an alternative cause can be presented instead of disproving specific causation of the claimant's melanoma. And again, I agree with the dissenting opinion that the epidemiologic evidence of general causation, which is this increased relative risk analysis, should be considered in determining whether one overcame the statutory presumption.
I dated myself with the Love Canal analysis, and I profusely apologize.
I think it's interesting also to know that in the legislative history, which is part of the record, when the General Assembly was discussing the presumption itself and whether to enact the statute and how it was going to be applied, they considered the Lemaster study and the fact that firefighting itself is an increased relative risk or a risk factor. So it would be manifestly unfair to say, hey, you can presume causation based on this risk factor, but to overcome the statutory presumption, you can't consider any risk factors. Again, this is, results in an absurd result contrary to the intent of the General Assembly, a strict liability statute, and respondents respectfully request that this matter be remanded to the LJ to make specific findings with respect to the risk factors and consider them as sufficient evidence in the matter of determining whether respondents overcame their statutory presumption. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your excellent arguments. The case will stand submitted, and the written opinion will issue in due course.